Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. Joining me this week is Roger Eric Tinch, art and online director for the CineVegas Film Festival. Thanks for being here.
Hello, internet people.
Yes, hello to the entire internet listening
the
to this.
Interwebs. Good evening or good morning.
So let's start this week with Hamlet 2. The comedy starring Steve Coogan, mm-hmm. popular British comedian who has done a few things in the U.S., but mostly sort of small roles, I think, in movies. He was actually in Tropic Thunder last week. He was the director of the ill-fated film in Tropic Thunder. And Steve Coogan stars here as a drama teacher in Tucson, Arizona, which gets reamed throughout this film.
The citizens of Tucson really probably should be petitioning this as the same people that are against the Tropic Thunder movie. There needs to be something done about the anti-Tucson.
It must be stopped. Apparently it was shot in Albuquerque, though, so they would not have known. But anyway, he plays this this drama teacher, sort of a failed actor, kind of a big loser, really, who is a little self-aware, is a little, you know, cognizant of the fact that he's not a good actor, but all he has is this drama class. And of course, the school district has decided to get rid of drama, mm-hmm. and he's got to put on one last production to save the drama program and redeem himself. And he's got these new students in his class that was previously just these two drama nerds, and now he's
conveniently a group of like hard-edged kids from the other side of town. And I thought what was kind of funny in the beginning was the villain was this little, I don't know, like fourth, fifth grader,
right.
that the critic,
the
that
drama
actually,
critic,
the drama
yes.
critic, which was cool. But then obviously that sort of transformed it into being the town and then the principal, and it just kind of, you know, it kind of, for me, it sort of lost its charm once it started rolling a little bit into the film.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I think on the one hand, they're doing almost like this parody mm-hmm. of the idea of the sort of let's put on a show and save our whatever. And also the inspirational teacher, you know, the Steve Coogan character loves Dangerous Minds,
yes,
and Dead Poets Society.
Which I thought was hilarious. That was a good touch too. But I don't know if they pushed that part of it enough. I mean, the film for me just was kind of a real like hodgepodge of like vaguely completed ideas and plot points. I mean, the only thing to me that kept it together was Steve Coogan's performance. I think if you had another actor in there, the film probably would be fairly unwatchable. But with him in it, he's the glue, I think, that keeps everything together and keeps people watching, at least from my point of view.
Yeah. No, I agree in that he's clearly trying really hard to get going and to hold together, like you said, this script that is not that good.
No.
That is
jumps,
very much
– it jumps a lot of places, goes down a lot of dead ends. And there was one shot in particular that to me sort of defines what was wrong with the film. It comes, you know, a little bit towards the beginning of the third act when everyone's seated ready for the big reveal of Hamlet 2. You know, there's this huge buildup, the crowd's, you know, buzzing, there's this big electricity, and there's this big white sort of sheet that falls down, and there's like this huge grand, you know, music playing behind it. And what do? We cut to the outside. It was like that to me was a problem with it. The way the film started was sort of strange. You're kind of just thrown into it. And then the way the movie ends too, and everything else in between, I thought was just as sort of what is happening here? Like, where are we going with this?
Yeah, it did seem to have a lot of ideas that didn't come together. And actually, at the beginning, I thought there was some funny stuff where you see the Steve Coogan character in his previous acting gigs as like a herpes medication commercial
and
a juicer infomercial. And it gets you into it. I mean, and in fact, it's similar in a way to the way that Tropic Thunder opened mm-hmm. With these fake trailers that it had for the actor characters, where you immediately get a sense of like, who is this person? What is his life like? And, you know, you can throw yourself right into the story immediately understanding him. But I think what you point out too with the play, to me, the play, the actual ridiculous Hamlet 2, which is this thing that his character conceives where it's going to be a sequel to Hamlet, but it's a musical and it has Jesus as a character and Hillary Clinton or something.
Yeah.
It sounds ridiculously over to the top and you wonder, what is this going to be like? And they only show you these small snippets
exactly.
of it.
I wanted to see, like, I really wanted to see that play rather than seeing the film that was about the creation of it. I mean, that was the thing. It's like you you pull the audience along for a good 50 minutes, you know, like saying how great this play is going to be. And then you probably don't even dedicate more than 10 to 15 minutes to the actual thing, which I thought – I mean, I thought that was a weird move. And I thought to me that was the thing that sort of just, I don't know, killed it, you know?
Yeah, it did. It did. I mean, I don't think it quite killed it because I think there's still a – you know, Coogan moves it along well enough that there's still – it still has its moments. But I definitely felt like – a movie that was as crazy and weird as this play theoretically is would have been a lot better. And they have the one big production number, the Rock Me Sexy Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but see, ultimately the climax just didn't have that punch. You know, it was great. No. And you know, after the film, you brought up a good point about the there was a lot of wants and needs throughout the film for a lot of different characters that did they get the money for to save
you the, don't really know
yeah program wasn't that the whole purpose of putting this on what happened to that element you know? So there were some things I felt like I kind of dropped as they got into that last bit of it and
it was definitely and this was a movie that was big at Sundance
one of the bigger sells at the festival
So. And you know you hear about those movies for months. And it builds an anticipation and it just kind of turns out to be disappointing. And I like this director, or I used to like Andrew Fleming, who directed The Craft way back in 1996.
I did not see that.
Which is
it was a big,
one of my favorite movies, actually.
It was a big film. I remember that.
And is I think, a fairly clever satire of a similar environment to this film of the high school cliques and stuff like that, but done in the context of sort of this tongue-in-cheek horror movie. And he directed Dick also with Kirsten Dunst and Michelle Williams, this sort of
– another one I haven't seen.
Political parody about Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
Which was not quite as clever, I think, as some people made it out to be. But he seemed to have a lot of promise, and then he went off and did like
– Does he write and direct? Is he a writer?
He's the co-writer on this, and I believe he was a writer on those other two as well.
Because they sound like that – if that holds true, then it seems like that's definitely his like
– Right. His kind of style. Yeah. The sort of teenage thing. Mm-hmm. And but he went off and he directed like Nancy Drew, I think, and some other like lame studio movie, and it seemed like he's going to get back and he's going to do this sort of semi-indie thing and it's going to be clever, and so I was disappointed by that. And the co-writer is Pam Brady, who worked on South Park and Team America, and they're pushing that connection in the advertising campaign, and I felt like when you see the Sexy Jesus song, you're like, this is a sort of South
Park
thing.
That feels like her part. Yes. Yeah, like that definitely feels like her part. The opening commercials that you're talking about, that kind of fits that too, like that sort of twisted, you know, humor.
Right. But the middle, the sort of standard whatever story is.
But you know what? I think this is – I've got to say this is David Arquette's greatest role ever.
He has like four lines.
Exactly. He's great.
That's one thing too, is that you have David Arquette, who's this ridiculously zany, over-the-top actor. And his character is the guy who is the most boring guy in the world. Like they talk about how that's the fact that that's who he is.
He organizes his pills, his pills he takes for his health, I guess, and is into protein shakes.
Yeah,
and it's pretty phenomenal. And then we also can't forget the cameo. A special cameo of Elizabeth Shue.
Right, it was more than a cameo, really, playing this version of herself. And even that, I feel like, has become almost a cliche, like, the sort of semi-washed up. No, I mean, she still gets work.
Yeah, totally.
Playing this parody almost of themselves. And they could have done a lot more with that, where she's decided to become a nurse. And I think that probably goes to the heart of what this movie is that there are things where it starts out and you're like, this is a good idea.
Exactly.
And then it just doesn't push to the level that it should.
It doesn't push the level,
So disappointing.
Are we going to grade this by Hamlets?
Do you want to? We can do that. You want to give it how many to bees or not to bees?
2.5 bards.
Yeah, no, I agree. I give it 2.5 stars in the paper, and I think that's about right. Right down the middle out of 5. It's a good concept, not executed well.
No,
and
totally agree.
Speaking of execution, we can move on to
seriously
Death Race, which is also opening this week. It's a remake of Death Race 2000, which was a Roger Corman B movie from 1975, which I don't think either of us have seen, actually.
I haven't seen, but I don't know if you've been checking out the blogs lately, but there is a writer that wrote a script called Joust that was basically this film, and now he is suing the filmmakers.
Oh, you know, I hadn't read about that.
Of Death Race, yeah.
Well, somebody ought to sue them.
Yeah, for my time. for my 90 minutes. I'll take 3 hours, though. I think I should get double.
There you go. Well, yeah, it would be worth it. But anyway, this movie was written and directed by the great Paul W.S. Anderson.
He's phenomenal.
Not to be confused with Paul Thomas Anderson. He's the director behind Mortal Kombat and Aliens vs. Predator.
So good.
And a movie, I will say, a movie that I actually liked, Event Horizon.
You're right. You are right. It was the ending that really clinched it for me.
Yeah. It's a very intense sort of sci-fi horror movie with Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne,
And there's a great idea behind it too, which right. when they did that final reveal kind of said, you know, this ain't too shabby.
Yeah,
you know?
It kind of worked. But that probably the pinnacle of Mr. Anderson's career.
I think that's probably like one of the only non-video game-esque films he's done.
That's true. It was a little more intense, yeah, with the alien. And he did that movie Soldier with Kurt Russell.
Great classic.
The original Resident Evil. You know, not the sequels, though. I think he wrote the sequels but did not direct them because he was far too busy developing Death Race.
And he has a high standard. He can't just do sequels.
Absolutely.
Left and right. Are you kidding me?
So Death Race stars Jason Statham, who is someone that I will genuinely say that I do like.
Yes.
Who's like kind of the reliable go-to B action guy these days.
Yep.
And he plays this man. It's in the future. It's 2012, I think it is. So it's in our near future. We're about to encounter the Death Race. And Jason Statham plays this man who's wrongly convicted of killing his wife. It's a setup. It's a conspiracy. And he ends up in prison which is run by Joan Allen as the warden. And in this prison, they stage the Death Race, which is a car race / whatever.
Match. They basically go in circles shooting guns at each other for like a good hour.
Yes.
That's essentially what the Death Race comes down to.
And so he has to play Frankenstein, who is this masked driver who has actually died, but they want him to impersonate Frankenstein and bring in their audience and carnage. And really the plot is inconsequential.
No, exactly. And that's the thing too. It really the one thing it did get right was it went straight to the action. It, you know, probably 10 minutes of setup, you know, very obvious direction that it was going. But when they get to it, you know, for the race sequences – that, you know, for me was sort of the pull for the film. I was like, yeah, this, it should be pretty cool as long as they do this right. And they didn't. You could not tell what was happening, what was going on, where the cars were. I mean, he basically sort of riffed off of Steven Spielberg's use of like the jitter cam with the, you know, high shutter speed and Saving Private Ryan, but didn't know how to use it. So I don't know.
Yeah, it is hard to follow the races, which is, again, all that there is to a movie like this. It's not like you're going to feel for Jason Statham's pain about, you know, his lost wife and his little daughter that he has to go back to and everything. I feel like I would have liked to say that this is just like a fun action movie and it's entertaining.
Not.
But it's very dull. It's very repetitive.
Oh, my God.
The cars drive around and around and around.
And the thing is, there was no like clear action sequence. Like, you know, you see a car chase. You know, I'll bring up the wonderful Michael Bay. I think people give him a lot of crap, but, you know, he knows how to do car chases.
Yeah.
Bad Boys 2, I got to say,
you
hands
have,
down,
okay, really?
Greatest car chase ever committed to film.
Wow.
You can quote me on that.
Okay. I haven't seen Bad Boys 2, but I will say I did like the car chase in The Rock at the beginning of The Rock.
Yep.
Is probably the only thing in the movie that I liked.
Which Paul takes sort of that sort of style from Michael Bay as well. The whole sort of zooming in, little pans here and there while they're in the car.
Right, right.
So, which, yeah. I mean, he clearly did not know how to use it because the races just became the same thing.
Like, yes.
Basically, there's three stages to the whole Death Race. And, you know, each stage, it gets farther and farther, hectic and more, you know, explosions and wham, bam. But it looks – I mean, they look exactly the same. There is no ingenuity at all.
And it's done in this very, like, dull gray color palette, which I'm sure is meant to indicate the – sadness and bleakness of the future.
Apocalyptic.
Right. Well, there's not even an apocalypse, is there? Yeah. It's just like people get upset or something.
Yeah, he gets fired from his factory job. And I guess that's
about it. And Joan Allen is just really, really uptight or something is kind of the thing.
And yeah. I mean, I'm really surprised that she's in this film. I think she was another element when I saw her in the trailer. I'm like, this might not be half bad.
Yeah.
Because I do. I love Jason Statham too.
And he's, you know, I'll say The Bank Job and Crank.
Yep.
And, you know, even like the first Transporter movie was okay. Or you know that he always has the right tone for these movies.
Crank, just... Crank is like the best sort of trashy action future to be cult classic film, I think.
I did like Crank. And they're making the Crank 2 right now, which
High Voltage
will be very exciting.
Did you know the storyline?
Right. Well, the character we can go off on. In the original Crank, of course, Jason Statham has some chemical in his body and he has to keep his adrenaline up or something like that.
Spoiler alert, people.
Oh, right.
Just kidding.
And in the new Crank, what is it? They remove his heart and they replace it with a metal
give himself a certain jolt like every 2 minutes or so.
Right. Which is totally ridiculous.
But it fits within this universe that the two directors created.
And it'll be hilarious, I'm sure. And that's the problem here is that there's no sense of the universe, and there's also no like humor to it.
There's no levity, very grim and
straightforward, and it's taken very seriously. When of course it's this ridiculous premise, and when you and I, when we saw it in this preview screening with a full house audience, people were cheering at these death scenes.
I didn't get it. And actually, yes, a guy that had seen the movie as well. He was walking out of the film and he told me he heard someone on the phone saying, "This is the best kick bleep movie ever," you know?
So yeah, it's...
I don't know. I just didn't connect with it.
I didn't connect with it either, and I feel like there's so many... You know, if you want to say that something, this is just a mindless action movie and it's fun, there are so many better action movies that you could go see.
Wanted, I think, is probably the best brainless sort of action film this summer.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of Wanted, but I will say...
Comparatively,
it's much better. And on the pure level of craft, on putting together chase scenes and action sequences, I will give you that Wanted is far superior. I had a lot of problems with the plot in Wanted. But I would say go see that over this.
I mean, if you're going in looking forward to seeing just like I said, some really great action sequences and some cool, you know, car chases, this film doesn't have it. It really has nothing to offer the world.
No, except Joan Allen saying, "Release the dreadnought," which I have a feeling is the only reason she signed on to this movie. Flipping through the show. I get to say that. Yeah. I'm on board.
Which, the script must be like 20 pages. I mean, I don't know how much dialogue is in this film.
Yeah.
But yeah, every time anyone opens their mouth, it's
not. You long for more car chases. Exactly. So don't see Death Race.
We'll give that what?
You want to give it a number of exploded heads or something?
Yes,
like that?
I like that too. No, 1.5 exploded heads.
1.5? I think I would probably agree with you. I might even give it 1 exploded head. I don't know.
What if you unexplode heads? So it's like a negative.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No, I would. I mean, I don't want to overstate it. It's not certainly the worst action movie ever. But actually, I'll move on now to a couple movies that I haven't seen, or that you haven't seen, rather.
Yeah, I haven't.
That one of which I did think was absolutely abysmal, and I apologize. This was a movie that premiered at the CineVegas Film Festival this year.
Yes.
And I'm sure it was a wonderful event with all the stars.
Yes.
The Rocker starring Rainn Wilson of The Office as this washed up former heavy metal drummer who was kicked out of his band before they went on to become hugely famous. And 20 years later, he joins the band of his nephew, which is this sort of awful, whiny, emo-ish band. And magically, they become hugely successful. And
does he play the drums naked? Is that part of the story
it's
point?
It's part of it. They've kind of overstated, I think, in the advertising. But part of the reason they become famous is a very convoluted setup where they have to do some rehearsal via YouTube. And so they're all filming each other. And he doesn't realize he's being filmed. So he's playing the drums naked. And they post it on the internet. And everyone watches him play the drums naked. And lo and behold, they also like the music. And therefore, they get this record deal and become hugely famous within the course of like a week.
Yeah. That's how the world works.
It's completely to say that it's completely unrealistic is sort of unfair because you don't really expect a movie like this
to be realistic.
Exactly. But it's so predictable and so unfunny.
But I think it was a safe choice. I think, you know, Rainn Wilson trying to transition from the small screen on being in The Office to, you know, having this movie career.
Oh,
I think it was a pretty safe choice for him
yeah.
to take that sort of film, you know, probably more in the avenue of like a oh, not a Jim Carrey.
It's like a Jack Black kind of thing. Yes, a lot of reviews have compared it to School of Rock,
yep.
Which is a much better movie because one of the problems here – and in fact, like Hamlet too, one of the problems here is that you don't get a sense of like what do these characters want mm-hmm. or need and how have they achieved it. There's no conflict. They – all of a sudden they become famous and everything is great and then there's some mild bumps along the road. But everything is wrapped up so quickly and there's the – Christina Applegate plays this love interest for Rainn Wilson who is – she's second billed and she does like nothing. They completely underplay this supposed love story. The teen characters in the band are very bland. And the worst thing for me is that there's this singer-songwriter, Teddy Geiger, who put out an album a couple years ago that wasn't very successful. And he is also an actor. He plays the leader of this band. And the whole movie is like an infomercial for this guy's music.
This real guy?
It was a real guy. And if you buy the soundtrack, it's got like 9 songs by this guy on it. Teddy Geiger. He was on the – if you remember the show Love Monkey – which very few people
do. I have never heard
of
it, but I want to watch it.
Which was with Tom Cavanaugh from Ed, and he played this like record company executive, uh-huh. and Teddy Geiger was on that show playing this like discovery that he had. It's this very bland sort
Maybe that's in his contract.
Adult like, contemporary. Yeah, and it just drove me nuts because it's so un-rock and roll, this guy's awful, awful music. And he does this cover of Nothing But a Good Time by Poison and just – if you could possibly sap all the fun out of a song like that, he does
it. Can we like put Teddy Geiger music under this whole podcast just kind of in the background?
Oh God, I hope not.
All right, scratch that.
Yeah, no. But I would say The Rocker is one of the least rockin' rock movies that I have ever seen.
It did not rock your pants off.
No. And I like Rainn Wilson. I think he's a funny guy.
Yeah, I think he's funny. Yeah.
And he does his best here, but I think he's probably better in an ensemble. And I'd like to see him. The other thing in this movie is that the guys who play his old band, they're called Vesuvius, this hair metal band that they kick him out. And they show up only like at the very beginning and the very end of the movie. And it's Will Arnett from Arrested Development and Bradley Cooper, who was in Wet Hot American Summer.
Yes.
Lonnie Ross from 30 Rock and Fred Armisen from Saturday Night Live.
Great.
Right. And you think, why is there not a movie about these guys?
They need to do a prequel. That's a great cast of dudes.
And they just are totally wasted. And that's, I think, the sort of sums up this movie. So I gave The Rocker 1.5 stars in the paper, and I would kind of put it on a par with Death Race. I think it's equally
– whoa.
I just really dislike – I like rock music, yeah. And I feel like this movie is just neutering, you know.
Your childhood.
Yeah. Well, not my childhood, just music.
Yes, sorry. Don't be so defensive.
And I don't mean I just – Teddy Geiger has really gotten me angry, I think, here. So moving on to something slightly more enjoyable, a movie that I think probably a lot of people would be skeptical of, The House Bunny, starring Anna Faris. And this is another – I will say, like The Rocker, very, very predictable. And like both of that – both that and Hamlet 2, sort of not very tightly plotted.
Mm-hmm.
Anna Faris plays a Playboy bunny who is kicked out of the Playboy mansion and, of course, is completely ill-equipped to deal with life. And so she stumbles onto this sorority of misfit, you know, unpopular girls who are, of course, very attractive actresses wearing, like, glasses.
Exactly.
And she decides to become their house mother and teach them to be confident and popular so that they can save their sorority and defeat the evil sorority. It's basically Revenge of the Nerds with hot chicks.
With hot chicks. That's a good way to...
And despite that ridiculous sort of lame-o premise, I will say that Anna Faris is very funny in this movie.
She
really plays this character exactly how you would want. And there's a fine line, I think, that you would have to walk between making fun of this person who is essentially a dumb bimbo and yet at the same time has to be the hero of your movie and learn something. And she falls in love with Colin Hanks, who doesn't just want her because she was in Playboy and he wants to get to her true self and all these very obvious things that you would expect. And it's got a lot of very broad, vulgar humor that doesn't necessarily work. But pretty much any time Anna Faris is there saying some ridiculous malapropism, it's funny.
Yeah.
It is genuinely funny.
I've only seen the trailer, and based on the trailer, I think it'd be a movie that I'm going to check out. I love it, Anna Faris. I mean, since the Scary Movie
days, right? She's been in all of those scary movies.
That's where she got her start, and so she definitely has that comedic timing and that comedic delivery. So
I could not
think that she couldn't carry this film.
Yeah, and I think it's produced by Happy Madison, which is Adam Sandler's production company. And I'm not a fan of Adam Sandler per se, but I think in terms of popularity, she could be the female Adam Sandler. She has that same ability to kind of create these characters, and she's the executive producer of this movie as well, so she's clearly taking a bit of control of what she's doing. So I think it was a sort of pleasant surprise. I don't want to oversell it. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is not very good.
Yeah, but it's if it's a funny movie that you enjoyed.
Yeah, I laughed. I laughed far more than I did at The Rocker. And by the way, Emma Stone, who is one of the band members in The Rocker, is also the sort of head sorority member in this movie who's kind of bland compared to Anna Faris.
Yeah, she's rising up there. She was in Superbad as well.
Yeah, so she's definitely like a hot –
she's climbing. Yeah,
yeah, and she's fine. But I would give The House Bunny maybe – 2¾ stars. It's a little better than Hamlet 2.
2¾ bunny peeps.
Bunny, you know, yeah, there you go. Bunny ears, maybe something like that. So give it a chance at least if you weren't sure about it.
I'm gonna see that, Josh Bell. Okay. Just because you said.
Uh-oh, now I'm on the line for it.
Yes.
So moving on to what's coming out on DVD this coming Tuesday, starting with What Happens in Vegas.
We have a lot of winners this podcast. I mean, how do we?
Well, we're in the dregs of summer here. This August-September period, late August, early September is always bad.
It's, yeah, it hurts.
And, but What Happens in Vegas, the thing about it is it made a ton of money. It was one of those movies that stayed – it's probably still in theaters despite coming out on DVD in like 3 days – is it stayed in theaters for a really long time. It steadily made money over time. And it's a very conventional romantic comedy with Ashton Kutcher and Cameron Diaz. And they play these two people that are on vacation in Vegas. And they get drunk and they meet each other and they decide to get married. And, of course, they wake up the next day and realize that they don't like each other. But they happen to have won $3 million or something like a lot of money in a slot machine, and they're disputing who gets the money. And a judge played by Dennis Miller decides for no reason other than that they're in a movie that he's going to sentence them to 6 months of being married before that they can get their money. And of course, they clash.
Antics.
And then they fall in love. And it's super predictable and totally inane and really annoying because the two characters spend the entire movie trying to sort of destroy each other and become sort of hateful in the process, and then you have to buy them falling in love and caring about them.
I mean, having those two leads together, there's just something about that mix. I mean, just separate, you know, Ashton and Cameron Diaz, just separately they're annoying, but together I can't even imagine the
– And I will say somewhat contrary to that I actually thought they had a decent amount of chemistry.
Oh, yeah.
Given the awfulness of this movie, and furthermore, in case you just want the Vegas connection, the first like 10 minutes take place in Vegas, and then the rest
of it casino
is I don't even remember. I don't think I recognized it, and I don't think they say specifically. Oh, but really? There's a lot of like going up and down the strip in a limo, and you see all the. I mean, they get their mileage out of it.
It's. I mean, I think it's a funny thing living in Vegas and then seeing these films how they portray Vegas, or just even geography wise. Like I remember watching 21 going, wait, they're in the Hard Rock. But they go downstairs and they're in the Red Rock. How does this work out?
And the Red Rock is not on the Strip.
Yeah,
and, it's not exactly a nuanced portrayal of Vegas. And Vegas is basically just a plot device here to get
a good
them in this situation.
Which I wonder if they had to pay for that.
You know, I don't know because the tagline is actually "What happens here stays here." But I would imagine
I thought it used to be "What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas," but then it morphed into after they sort of couldn't really put much more gas into that, become what happens here.
I think
here.
It's always been, but people get it confused. I'm not sure, but
it's like the man on the moon thing. What did he say?
Oh yeah, one giant leap.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, it's up there with those conundrums.
But certainly, it's recognizable to people as a slogan, and they get a lot of mileage out of it. But I wouldn't recommend that. And but one movie we can recommend on DVD is one I know that you've seen that I haven't seen, which is the David Mamet movie Red Belt.
Yeah, Red Belt is essentially. From what I hear, David Mamet is a huge MMA fan.
Mixed martial arts.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
If you've seen an episode of UFC, then you should have it covered. But what I love about this film, and if you don't know who David Mamet is, you need to see Glengarry Glen Ross immediately. I would rent that film and definitely check out the speech by Alec Baldwin in that film. It's pretty phenomenal. But David Mamet being he's been doing films for a good 15 years and being a playwright, I'm sure even longer than that.
Oh, yeah.
And this film follows basically a fight instructor that has sort of put aside his fighting career to teach other fighters, you know, how to defend themselves. And then gets embroiled in some crime that sort of all kind of leads up to this big fight event where one of his mentors is attending, as well as his arch enemy is attending as well. It sounds kind of
Chuck
lame,
Norris-esque.
Yeah. But the thing that I really love about it is it's so much about the martial arts, but so much not about the martial arts.
Yeah.
And it really kind of played with the expectations of what you would expect in a film that, you know, the title itself, Red Belt, you know, signifies that there should be a lot of martial arts, which there are. But you could tell that Mamet has a really deep appreciation for the art form. He really, like, understands it.
Right. Well, anything very hyper-masculine, I think David Mamet is definitely on board with.
Yeah, and that was one thing that really struck me is really his love for the martial arts really showed through. And then, like, sort of where it heads towards, you know, this big showdown, it doesn't – and I don't want to give it away, but it doesn't really go where you expect it. And I loved him for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're an MMA fan, definitely check it out. If you're a Mamet fan, check it out. Actually, yeah. If you like films in general,
I kind of hate David Mamet, and so I'm not sure if I really need to see this movie.
Well, did you see Spartan?
I didn't see Spartan.
That was another – and he does that. He always creates like genre sort of defying films. Like Spartan was like a crime thriller, but it kind of wasn't either. So – and yeah, I mean, you know, the typical Mamet speak, the very short bursts
of
like –
Yeah, and I feel like maybe if it was a different director and they kind of toned down his incredibly mannered way that he has the actors speak that sounds so fake to me – maybe I could go for it, but I just over time have kind of gotten increasingly fed up with David Mamet.
It's not as on show here as it is, but what I like about the way he writes, especially dialogue, is it keeps the momentum moving forward.
Right.
There's not people repeating things that are answering questions with questions. It's just it just kind of, you know, just goes forward. And if you can't catch up, then, you know, you better or else you'll be lost.
Right.
And this film, it's not as full blown, but there's definitely touches of it. Yeah. Which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, overall, it was a pleasant surprise. It wasn't what I was expecting him to do, which I think what is kind of like
made
me like it. Yeah.
But was Rebecca Pidgeon in it?
Rebecca Pidgeon.
His wife, who's always in the movies, who's like the worst actress.
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't know
about
this.
If you didn't notice an incredibly awful, like mousy-looking, brown-haired female actress, then she probably wasn't in it.
Well, Randy Couture was in it, who's, you know, this...
Well, he's a brilliant actor.
The ex...
Star of The Scorpion King 2.
You know, taking the reins from The Rock.
Yeah.
So he was in it and really kind of didn't do anything in the film. He basically played a UFC news... I should stop saying UFC... MMA newscaster and kind of really just plays himself. There's not much involved.
He probably can't do much else.
But, you know, it looks good on the video box. It'll get people to check it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Because of David Mamet. The David Mamet fans and the MMA fans, for some reason.
Don't really overlap,
I don't
probably.
Think they do. Yeah, but, no, I would definitely – I give this film an A+. I'm moving on to the graded.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. Any way you want to do it.
A+.
So check out Red Belt on DVD on Tuesday. And I would say give a chance to The House Bunny in theaters if you laughed at the trailer. If you cringed at the trailer, don't bother. But if you think it might be funny, give that a chance.
Josh Bell, I'm watching it.
And
because you don't like anything. So if you like something –
then,
whoa,
yeah.
It's got to be good.
I hope. I hope you're not disappointed. So,
Internet people.
That's gonna wrap it up. Thank you, Roger Eric Tinch.
Thanks.
From CineVegas for joining me.
Thank you, Josh Bell,
for having me on.
Thank you, Internet peeps, for listening.
Yes, thank you to the Internet. For Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell, and tune in next week.
Peace.
Josh Bell hates everything!
That's right, including your movie!
Josh Bell hates everything!
Except...